This is a special edition of Macro Voices with hedge fund manager Eric Townsend, the premier financial podcast targeting professional finance, high net worth individuals, family offices, and other sophisticated investors. Now, for this special edition of Macro Voices, here's hedge fund manager Eric Townsend.
Macro Voices All-Stars Episode 53 was recorded on September 9th, 2019. I'm Eric Townsend. JDI Research founder Juliet DeClercq is back with us this week. Juliet, all eyes are on the ECB on Thursday. What should we expect?
Okay, firstly, on the ECB, I think we need to have a big rethinking about what a big package means. So I think this week, investors anticipate that the ECB will unveil a super package, including rate cuts, a tiered system, and a return to QE. I think that consensus is probably like 10 basis point cuts and 30 billion euros of QE per month. What I've shown in the last JDI research report entitled Change is the Only Constant is that monetary policy now works in reverse. So how does a so-called big package even make any sense at this point? Come back on what I explained in my report. Central banks have been so successful with forward guidance and literally convincing the public that positive saving rates will soon be a thing of the past. And, you know, as an aside, arguably social media and fear-mongering has had a multiplied effect on that. That basically individuals are leaping at what they believe to be the last opportunity to save with positive rates. The issue with the quote-unquote low yields forever scenario is that one needs to save a lot more to maintain living standards upon retirement, and a collective increase in precautionary savings lowers final demand, in turn constraining investment and resulting in an even worse macroeconomic outlook. Now, for a U.S. investor, that might not make complete sense because obviously U.S. savers save a lot more in equities, but European investors save a lot more in fixed income, which is where my point really is. So where we stand right now is in a typical case of individual rationality breeding collective irrationality. And this is the reason why I believe Nobel Prize economists' models are broken. Monetary policy, which once we thought was a rectifying stimulus, has not only become important in the Eurozone and Japan, it's actually turned counterproductive. So for the first time in history, lower rates literally have become contractionary. And this is the very reason why the volume of negative yielding debt has gone exponential this year, literally because monetary policy triggers vicious rather than virtuous cycles as what was happening in the past.
Juliet, let's pretend that the world is a better place than it is and that you were in charge of monetary policy. What would your prescription be for how to solve this monetary issue now?
So we're in a very problematic scenario where basically we need sovereign intervention or we risk free markets literally triggering a financial crisis. So I think the right macro response would be for sovereign demand to substitute itself to private demand. And that's in order to boost aggregate demand and absorb part of the extra saving load. After all, when you think about it, the main beneficial effect of the collapse in global yields is to render global fiscal levers more potent by stabilizing and actually in some cases shrinking debt ratios with no effort, thereby inviting fiscal stimuli. Today, even though developed market sovereign debt levels are much higher than before the global financial crisis, the ratio of interest expense to GDP is actually often lower than before the crisis. And this is obviously especially true in the euro area. So what we find is that developed market central bank and outside the US, that is outside the US, they can still facilitate the next stimulus, but they can no longer deploy it on their own. forward guidance of low for long must give way to a credible framework for fiscal monetary policy coordination, because this is the only credible way forward to boost not only potential growth, but also inflation expectations. So going back to your first question on what will happen on Thursday, what would be self-defeating is more promises of lower for longer rates and QE infinity. What would really light the end of the financial repression tunnel is a glimpse of a way forward, which in my opinion is not passing the baton to fiscal authorities, but a way to coordinate stimuli between monetary and fiscal authorities. And that's a step that would steepen rather than flatten the yield curve, which is exactly the opposite of what forward guidance has been aiming to achieve.
Can you be more specific about how that would work?
Well, I think that there are many ways this fiscal monetary coordination could be implemented legally across the globe. And what eventually is implemented will depend on each particular legislation. But for example, we could see governments issue debt permanently monetized by the central bank to finance tax rebates. So we could like basically have a government having an account at the central bank, which the central bank actually controls. So that doesn't mean that central banks lose their independence. As controversial as it may sound, monetary financing of fiscal expansion is not something new at all. It was very widespread until the early 1980s, until controlling hyperinflation became the primary focus, and when central banks were made independent with a mandate to limit inflation. Basically, we don't need to go as far as Zimbabwe or Argentina to find that. It has happened in UK, France, Italy. Also, another point I would like to take home is that the amount of global debt held by central banks in the middle of the last century was actually higher than it is today. But the bottom line is that the answer to the next downturn will not be purely monetary or purely fiscal. Inevitably, I think we will see the division between monetary and fiscal policy become increasingly hazier.
Juliet, in concrete terms, what's the first step?
So we've had Larry Summers put it bluntly and rightly, and that's exactly the way I'm thinking. What he's saying is what is needed are admissions of importance to spur efforts by governments to promote demand through fiscal policies and other means. My strategic point and belief here is that if such policy mix considerations could just be floated publicly and their framework outlined, this would remove the risk of a persistent liquidity trap and permanently negative real and nominal rates. In other words, as soon as you can start like talking about a credible plan B, sometimes you don't even need to use the plan B and you can stay with the plan A. So in this case, the result would be a more balanced risk distribution for inflation and policy rate expectations and a return of term premium. It would also obviously increase the global equilibrium rate of interest rates, and it would actually lower equity term premium. In my opinion, it's the absence of concrete and efficient countercyclical policy tools, basically an alternative to conventional or unconventional monetary policy, that is causing markets to sound alarm bells and collapse term premium and yields along global yield curves as savings are basically rushing to find a suitable shelter. Let's put it clearly, in the very short term, I certainly don't expect this from Mario Draghi, because it would be literally admitting that the last 3 years of his career was spent pushing on a string, or even worse, shooting himself in the foot. However, amongst other controversial thoughts on the dollar, Bank of England Carney urged in a key speech, which many of you will have read because of the dollar view, but amongst this dollar view, he also talked about the evolution of the global monetary framework. And his words were, "The growing risk of a global liquidity trap puts a high premium on getting more than just monetary policy right. Limited space for monetary policy to respond to adverse shocks means more of the burden for supporting jobs and activity will fall to fiscal policy. Though some may be tempted to resort to protectionism, such policies would merely serve to make the problem worse. In my view, we're still very far from cooperation, but pushing the burden of stimulating activity to fiscal authorities is elusive, simply because government-led fiscal expansions are not sufficiently reactive and not sufficiently nimble. Also, they're not transparent enough. So what we could imagine is a ballooning digital account, and I know that's something that you've been talking about in your book, Eric. So what we could imagine is a ballooning digital account at the central bank for governments or even for people. And that would fix this problem by making fiscal authorities' firepower more visible and more quantifiable. So in my opinion, it's now time for action and cooperation rather than just words. And I have high hopes that the new president of the ECB, Christine Lagarde, can forge ahead on this crucial matter, perhaps even starting to work an international consensus.
And what does that mean market-wise?
Market-wise, this thought formed part of a wide-ranging strategy report, which we published on September 1st, and in which we identified a market inflection point. So what I've just been talking about was the basis for our recommendation to take profit in our year-to-date aggressive positive stance in fixed income, and in fact, to go the other way. In the same report, we also argued that such a turn in yields would not be a danger for equities as long as our views related to China, Trump, and the US economy proved right, because global equity risk premia were already discounting a high risk of an imminent recession, and therefore that our earlier 2019 outlook was now priced. And when this happens, for me and for JDI research in general, it is really a compulsory trigger for global rethink and deeper analysis, which is exactly what we've done in the last week of August.
Juliet, thanks so much for another great interview. We look forward to getting an update from you in a couple of weeks. Meanwhile, listeners, we've got a fantastic content lineup for you on Macro Voices this week. You just heard from Juliet. Tomorrow, Tuesday, we've got Professor Steve Keen talking about China lowering their reserve lending ratio. Then on Wednesday, it'll be Danielle DiMartino Booth to talk about the Fed, talk about Jay Powell, and a really interesting article that we wrote. We're negotiating with her people to try to get you a free copy of that subscriber newsletter. We'll try to get that for you on Wednesday's All-Stars appearance. I'll have to ask for your patience with us, folks, on Energy Week. What's happened is for a couple of weeks, we had an intentional break that we took in order to give our production staff a summer holiday. Then last week, the Zencastr system that we need to use to record all of our guests at the same time had a global breakdown on Wednesday, and we had to cancel that show last minute. This week, we had a last minute guest cancellation, and unfortunately, we're going to have to postpone Energy Week until next week. We're going to try to get Anas Alhaji in for an All-Stars appearance or some kind of cameo appearance on Wednesday afternoon just to talk about Khalid Al-Falih being ousted as Saudi Arabia's energy minister. Big news there, and I'm hoping that we can get Anas on at least for a cameo appearance to talk about that. And then on Thursday, definitely tune in for our flagship Macro Voices podcast when we'll have an epic doubleheader interview. It's both Jeff Snyder and Luke Groman at the same time in the same place going deep on the U.S. dollar global liquidity shortage. That's going to be a really fantastic interview on Thursday evening. Then finally, on Friday, in our spotlight interview, we've got Bob Colman talking about private vaulting options for precious metals. So be sure to stay tuned for all of that fantastic content coming your way this week. For the Macro Voices Podcast Network, I'm Eric Townsend.
that concludes this edition of Macro Voices. Be sure to tune in each week to hear feature interviews with the brightest minds in finance and macroeconomics. Please register your free account at macrovoices.com. Once registered, you'll receive our free weekly Research Roundup email containing links to supporting documents from our featured guests and the very best free financial content our volunteer research team could find on the internet each week. You'll also gain access to our free research library. And the more registered users we have, the more we'll be able to recruit high-profile feature interview guests for future programs. So please register your free account today at macrovoices.com if you haven't already. You can subscribe to Macro Voices on iTunes to have Macro Voices automatically delivered to your mobile device each week free of charge. Macro Voices is presented for informational and entertainment purposes only. The information presented on Macro Voices should not be construed as investment advice. Always consult a licensed investment professional before making investment decisions. The views and opinions expressed on Macro Voices are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect those of the show's hosts or sponsors. Macro Voices, its producers, sponsors, and hosts, Eric Townsend, shall not be liable for losses resulting from investment decisions based on information or viewpoints presented on Macro Voices.